The following podcast contains language that is not suitable for everybody.
This week on Super Skull, the world is a scary and complicated place, plus a board game review. Alrighty, welcome to Super Skull, your weekly new comic day audio digest from Vault of Midnight, Earth's finest comic books and stuff since 1996. My name is Nick Weibar. I'm here with Curtis Sullivan.
Yo, what's up?
How are you, sir?
I'm super good. 1996 was 21 years ago, and it feels good to be here. 21.
1996 was 19 years ago.
Let's not do the math, okay?
Okay.
In my mind, it's 21 years.
I'm also here with Marcus Schwimmer.
Hello, how are you?
How's your math feeling this morning?
My math is never good, but we had a really good conversation before the podcast started about the 90s, and it made me nostalgic for some things.
That's your natural mode.
Nostalgic?
Is nostalgia. That's your default mode.
Yeah, probably.
Am I wrong?
The world was never better than yesterday.
That's the saddest fucking thing I've ever heard. Also, demonstrably untrue. I have so many problems with everything you just said.
Why do you think that?
Oh, my Lord. I don't even have time to get into it.
Yeah, it's something about rose-colored glasses. It's fine, you know, I guess.
Does that imply... All right, we can't get into it. This is a comic book podcast.
Yeah.
It's a weekly audio digest where we talk about all the new stuff that's coming out and help guide you through it.
We do that stuff
through
every week.
The morass of pages that release every single week.
There's so much crap.
We got a pretty good show for you today. Let's say pretty good.
I'm going to say, yeah, it's going to be 79%.
Yeah, exactly. Not our best, not our worst.
You wait to see what I'm going to bring to the table, boys.
Are you going to push it over the edge into good?
Oh, it's going to be good.
I think we're due.
Yeah, right? You flop around long enough, you got to have a good one at some point.
We got some big picks. We're going to do the pull box where we talk about a big mass of other stuff that comes out. We got a really good week in thick-ass comics, graphic novels.
Amazing thick-ass comic week.
We're going to do the numbers.
We are.
Where we talk about the financials of the comic book industry a little bit. We're going to do a little bit differently this week.
I dropped the phrase thick-ass comics on a customer this week.
How'd it go?
Not good.
They didn't like it?
She was like, I'm looking for some comics and some graphic novels. And she just meant graphic novels.
Yeah.
She was taking graphic novels and dividing it into two different categories. And I was like, you mean thick-ass comics? And she looked at me like I was a complete and utter moron.
I love that story.
And I just rolled with it. I was like, whatever. But that's one of my pet peeves.
Is when people talk about
trade paperbacks and graphic novels as they're two separate things. Mm. Like one is highbrow, one is lowbrow.
I can't stand it when people talk about when people say, I read graphic novels, I don't read comic books.
Yeah.
That makes me bummed out.
You hear that all the time, too. People like say that.
Yeah.
So the joke follow-up to it is like, it's fine. They're all thick-ass comics. And then maybe the person will give you like a chuckle and you'll break the ice. No, this this woman was not buying what I was selling.
That's the thing with icebreakers. You know, sometimes they just hit,
just bounces right off the ice.
Yeah, I did it with my biggest smile, too, and she just wanted nothing to do with it.
Excellent. Well, it's... I wish I could have seen that.
I was just like, they're all thick-ass comics. She was she was just like, no, did nothing.
Let's talk about some small-ass comics.
Let's
do it.
Some thin-ass comics.
For show.
Every week, we each pick a book, and it's one thing that we're really excited about. Maybe it's the best thing we read all week. Ideally, it's something brand new under the best of circumstances and that you can just jump into it right away. Does that sound accurate, gentlemen?
Yeah, totally.
I would think so, yeah.
Marcus, what was your pick this week?
So this week I picked Jim Henson's The Storyteller Dragons, 1 of 4. Now, if you are a longtime listener of the podcast, and I know you are, a few months ago, probably half a year ago, I was very excited about the first iteration of this story called Jim Henson's Witches. Mm-hmm. Which was coming out at the same time as Witches.
So that was Jim Henson's Storyteller.
Right.
Which is the Uber series.
Right.
And then they all have these subtitles about a fantastic thing.
Sure. And the last one was Witches. Mm-hmm. And now we're on to Dragons. This one is written by or story and art is by Daniel Bayless. The script is by Fabian Rangel Jr.
Yes.
Who you may know as the writer of Space Riders.
What the hell is Space Riders?
Space Riders is a book that came out this week in thick-ass comic format, mm-hmm. so you can check it out. It's about...
It's been releasing all year.
Yeah, in single issues. Mm-hmm. It's now out as a thick-ass comic. But it's about a space vagabond and his crew. And it's very psychedelic and very 80s and very awesome.
It's maybe the... It might be the best thing I read all year.
It's one of my favorite things all year.
Yeah, it's up there for me for sure.
Yeah, it's about a Captain Pellegrino, disgraced, but then... Undisgraced, mm-hmm. the pilot of a ship, the Santa Morte,
mm-hmm.
and what, his space orangutan buddy and his cyborg his android assassin buddy. Android lady. Yeah. Yeah, damn fine comic.
Oh, David Peterson did the variant cover for Storytellers.
So that's,
that makes sense.
So that's Space Riders, which yes. we all love, and we yeah. were really surprised to see that the same writer is doing the scripts for this book, which is
totally
different in tone.
Yeah, yes. absolutely.
So yeah, tell us about
so
this.
So the premise of Storytellers is that there's an old man, and he's retelling his tales to his dog. Mm-hmm. That's how they all start. And this one is about a father and son who are out fishing, and they kind of come into these into this mythical story about a sea dragon. And it's very much based in Native American folklore. The art definitely draws inspiration from that. But it is just the coolest tale out there. It's got, like, the dragon in this one is the sea serpent, and its arch nemesis is thunderbirds, which are like these giant hawks.
Everybody knows
yes.
that thunderbirds hate dragons.
They hate them.
Especially sea dragons.
Sea dragons in yep. particular.
They're the worst.
They're the worst.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is well established.
So the father and son are out fishing. They encounter this sea dragon that gets into this giant epic battle with thunderbirds, and they get separated, the father and son, on two different islands.
Yeah.
The father is on the home island of the sea serpent. And the boy is on this other island.
An adventure ensues.
And an adventure ensues. This is a great story. So what I love about these witches and dragons and the Storyteller series is that each one of this four-part series will be done by a different creative team.
And they're one-shots, essentially.
Essentially, yeah. Under the same theme.
Yep.
One could say that they share a zeitgeist.
I don't I don't know that you know what zeitgeist means.
I just like using the word. I'll be
great right. word.
It's a great word.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was an absolute blast.
So it's cool. I like this series because it follows the format of the Jim Henson's The Storyteller TV show. You guys right. remember this one way back?
I feel like my heart remembers it.
Yeah, your heart does.
My brain doesn't remember
yeah.
it.
Yeah, it was this show, and it's the old man and his dog, who was a puppet dog on the show.
Yeah.
I love
which
that.
Which was pretty cool. And they would start off with him in front of the fireplace with the dog, mm-hmm. and then they would, you know, he would start, "Hey, dog. Here's a story about whatever."
Talking dog.
The dog did talk. Mm-hmm. And then they would go into the story. And it's cool. That's the lead-in for every issue of Storytellers, is that nice fireplace setting, mm-hmm. the old man, who I always thought was Jim Henson, but it's not. It's just an old dude.
Yeah.
I just always assumed, you know, that's Jim Henson. Wrong. Just a guy. But, yeah, I think it's really cool. So fans of that show, right, which is now currently streaming on various video on demand sites.
Oh, is it?
It is. So
I love. I'm going to say it. I love puppets.
Me too. How do you feel about Muppets?
I love Muppets. I think in a different life, I would have been a puppeteer.
Really?
No.
Yeah. But the problem is I don't know. I cannot craft.
Oh.
I don't know how to. And that's a big part of it. Apparently, you got to make your own fucking puppets. Yeah. You can't just show up like, "Yo, where the puppets at? I'm ready.
Give me some puppets."
Did you know that near our very own recording spot in Saline, Michigan, there is a marionette museum, one of the world's most famous marionette crafters.
Oh, I don't get down on marionettes.
It's the same thing. It's a puppet.
Ain't nothing but a fake puppet.
It's a puppet with strings.
I know. I'm just pushing your buttons.
It's a puppet.
I had no idea of this museum, though, that you speak
absolutely
of.
Absolutely true. Yep.
This wonderful museum.
Do you watch a lot of Fraggle Rock as a kid?
I love Fraggle Rock.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Now that you mention it.
Big puppet guy.
So back to Storytellers.
I can't tell if you're full of shit or not.
I actually seriously
okay.
do.
Okay, good.
I think the best thing about this book, I love that it draws from the Native American folklore. The sea monster has like giant elk antlers,
mm-hmm.
and Daniel Bayless's art style fits really well.
It's
with
really
his
sharp.
Style.
I love the art in this book. I thought the book itself was kind of cheesy.
That's because you don't appreciate the father-son story.
Wow.
What? Is that mean?
No,
is that mean?
It wasn't the father-son stuff that it was just kind of like, I don't know. It was just kind of
It's very in the style of the show, though. It's a little bit lightweight.
A little fable-y.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm interested to see what other fables they bring to the table, because I thought Witches was so cool because it was so wildly different. Every issue was a different culture, a different fable or lore.
Yeah.
And that was, I thought, was really cool.
Look at how dope this snake serpent looks.
The art's very sharp.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
And
what's the art style kind of remind you of?
Well, all the creatures are very Native American, very almost Aztec in their super bright,
ooh,
colorful,
yeah,
design, you know? The Thunderbirds, yeah, are almost statuesque.
Yeah, for sure.
And painted.
Or that they could have been carved of stone in some ways.
And then come to life.
Yeah.
This comic made me hate Thunderbirds.
I love Thunderbirds. They're the protectors of good.
No, they're really mean in this book.
Yeah, but they're
jerks.
They're fighting sea serpents. That's like their job.
Is the sea serpent like established that he's a bad guy, or is he just like doing his thing?
It's complicated.
I don't think it is.
It's totally complicated. We don't want to spoil the book,
right,
but it's complicated.
I think the art in this book is phenomenal.
Thunder jerks.
yeah.
More like,
God, it's so good. Please check this book out. If you like folklore, fairy tales, dragons, great art, any of those things, Jim Henson's The Storyteller's Dragons, number one, is for you. I'm very excited to see what else comes out in this series.
Yeah, when I say it's cheesy, I mean like I still liked it. It was good. It was just, that's what they're going for.
It's a
fairy tale vibe.
Yeah. Yep.
And they nailed that exactly. I kind of wish there were fewer words in that comic.
Oh, I didn't notice that or think it.
I noticed that and thought it with my brain gut.
Here's you thought it was wordy.
You should have used your heart meat.
Yeah, for something like that, it seems like if you're going for simple, if the tale is simple, if it's a timeless thing, then shut up. Just
stop talking.
Let me feel it. Just can I feel it?
I felt it.
All right. Well.
All right. Jim Henson's The Storyteller's Dragons. I love dragons, though. I love puppets. I love dragons.
Dragon puppin.
Say it again?
Nope, because I fucked it up.
Perfect. Curtis, what was your pick this
My
week?
My pick of the week was The Totally Awesome Hulk number one.
Totally Awesome Hulk number one.
You know what my review of this book is?
God, don't do it.
It was totally awesome. God. Review done. Next.
Wow. That actually is a Super Skull review.
Next comic.
Totally awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Why did you like this book? Well, I thought it was really awesome.
It was really awesome.
And
I really
great,
liked
and
it.
It was really good.
Next time on Super Skull.
So this is number one. Another all-new, all-different Marvel comic.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of these, as you may know.
Is this the... it's a Hulk number one.
It is.
Is this the Hulk that we know and love?
It is not.
Who is it?
Now Amadeus Cho is the Hulk.
So this is a total... This is not Bruce Banner.
This is not.
This what's going on with this guy?
So Amadeus Cho has been around for a while. He first showed up in like World War Hulk and stuff like this,
mm-hmm,
created by the writer of the book now, Greg Pak. So it's the original creator of the book on his creation.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Banner is no more.
What happened to Bruce Banner?
He absorbed a ton of radiation and he saved a bunch of people, but it messed him up and he's out of the game. So Bruce Banner, Hulk, no more.
Okay.
Is he dead? Is he gone forever? Probably not.
Do we know how... So Bruce Banner's gone. There's no more traditional Bruce Banner or Hulk in the Marvel Universe.
Correct.
Ostensibly.
Yep.
Amadeus Cho,
mm-hmm,
also was got a little bit of Hulk juice going.
Well, so he became pals with Bruce Banner over the events of many issues of the Hulk and World War Hulk and that kind of stuff. And he has replicated Banner's experiment. And he has now Hulk abilities.
Amadeus Cho, eighth smartest dude in the world.
Correct.
Via what scale? I love the scale they use.
What was it, the Hank Pym scale?
It's the Pym von Doom scale.
It is. Yeah. I love how they measure that. The setup in this book is Amadeus Cho can go Hulk when he wants. He retains a lot of his smartness when he's Hulk, but there are some different personality traits that come out when he is the Hulk.
He can talk when he's the Hulk.
He can.
He can flirt.
Mm-hmm. He's definitely flirting. But it also, they allude to the fact that he is struggling. The Hulk is so hulky that he's having, you know, he's working to contain it.
Mm-hmm.
He'll have little tiny moments of light anger, not full-blown Hulk flip-out stuff, but we'll see where that goes. That thread will probably... keep going. So the setup here is Amadeus hangs out with a sister who is the seventh smartest person in the world,
mm-hmm.
and they have a food truck that has that flies. It's called the Meat Wagon. That's their base of operation, and they're currently hunting like kaiju-like beasts.
Yeah, what's up with that? Is that related to other stuff that's happening in the Marvel Universe? Is that related to the big Terrigen Mist thing?
Not that they allude to in this book or that I've seen in other books.
So there are just kaiju-like monsters running around the world.
Yes.
And he's got to catch them all.
He's got to catch them all.
He's got to fight them and shrink them and keep
them in jars. Yep.
Pokemon Hulk. I didn't make that connection. It's totally Pokemon Hulk.
And that's his mission. He's just traveling around the world shrinking monsters.
Exactly. As we know, as we understand from issue one.
Okay.
The big bad in this book is a double-headed turtle monster. That's totally awesome.
Mm-hmm.
See what I did there?
Okay. That's almost a joke.
thanks, Nick. The art's by Frank Cho, which I think is awesome because it's totally awesome because he's drawing a character called Amadeus Cho. So that's great. Frank Cho, we know from books like Liberty Meadows.
Yeah.
He's well known for his voluptuous women. He did a book called Shauna the She-Devil, which is an old Marvel comic that's been around for a super long time. It's about what you think. It's about Shauna.
Mm-hmm.
She's a she-devil. She wears like a leopard skin bikini. She hangs out in the jungle, so she's like a jungle lady. So
what I liked about this book is Amadeus Cho is 19 years old.
Correct.
And I feel like he was written like a 19-year-old.
It really worked for me.
Sometimes that doesn't happen. Sometimes they pull out the teenage superhero, and they just seem like they're 40.
Yeah. Exactly.
They have all the knowledge. They know what to do. They're fighting bad guys. They have a cause.
Yeah.
Amadeus Cho wants to eat food
because
he's always hungry because when he hulks out, it boosts up his metabolism.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of a cool. We've seen The Flash do this for a while, but I thought it was a neat aspect of
the Hulk.
We've
seen The Flash do this in comic books?
Yeah, forever.
Comic books and TV shows. Yeah, he's got to eat a lot of his metabolism.
Carb up because he's running all the
time. Yeah, he has like a special candy bar that was created forever ago. But so
he has a special candy bar?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Like a power bar.
It's like a power bar, essentially. Yeah. So Amadeus Cho is eating food. He is trying to desperately meet a lady.
Yes.
He just wants to meet
a lady. He's just flirting.
There's a wonderful scene where he teams up with She-Hulk, and his sister's on like the intercom, and she's like, don't flirt with me. He's like, she's 40. And I really liked that. Like, I thought it was a really good way to establish that he's younger, he's learning.
I thought it was pretty rude to She-Hulk, though.
Well, you know, She-Hulk's maybe showing her age a little bit. She-Hulk, he's 19 years old. She-Hulk's been around for...
She-Hulk takes She-Hulk really good care of herself.
I'm saying she doesn't look a day over like 27.
We'd all be so lucky.
I agree, but yeah. I thought they did a really great job establishing his age and making him act like a 19-year-old.
Accordingly. I agree. So we always joke about how the Hulk would Hulk out and lose his clothes, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens in this issue, and I'm so glad that I finally got to see this in a comic.
Do you get to see, the Hulk nude?
You do. There's a sensor bar over
finally.
His.
Finally.
Yeah. But I've been waiting for years to. Because, yeah. I mean, you know, we've all thought about it. I mean, he goes Hulk, and like somehow.
We've all thought about it.
He keeps his shorts on.
Yep.
That ain't going to happen. Man, you going to lose them shorts, dog. So, Naked Hulk, Giant Kaijus. I think the art kills. I love Amadeus Cho. People are going to be like, oh, man, but his hairdo, man, it looks so like. So awesome. So totally awesome. That means I got to hate on it.
I've heard ice cream
hair. Don't
do
that. Yeah, ice cream hair. It rules. And his hair changes when he changes into Hulk.
Yeah.
Why? No reason.
But he has full control over his faculties.
He does.
So there's no reason why you turn into Hulk. You can't just give yourself a little
pull a pomade.
Little muss up.
Why not?
A pomade.
Just like straighten it out.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's no earthly reason why you can't do that.
This issue of Hulk sponsored by X Hair Products.
Yes.
No. Okay.
All right. So I thought this comic book was totally badass, and I had a blast with it. If you like fun.
It was fun.
If you like good art, if you like quippy, nice, solid dialogue. I like where this is going. I want to see Hulk just fly around the world in his food truck with his sister and fight giant monsters.
Hulk's been really good. I'm throwing it out there. Hulk's been great.
Yeah?
Yeah.
The recent stuff?
The Mark Waid Hulk.
That's true. You're right.
Was really good.
You're right.
Yes. The Jason Aaron stuff before that is my favorite Hulk.
You love that Hulk.
I love, if listener, can I talk to you for a second, listener? If you haven't checked out the 2-volume, it was like 10 or 12 issues that Jason Aaron did on, it was called The Incredible Hulk. if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're right.
And the Stay Angry arc of The Incredible Hulk is one of the best superhero comics I've ever read.
Dang.
It's the best Hulk I've ever read.
What?
It's crazy good. Stay Angry.
All right. Jason Aaron.
Jason Aaron.
Dude doesn't fuck around.
He doesn't fuck around. And the premise of it is really interesting. I won't go off and on, but check it out. Stay Angry.
Can I say that I'm totally down with the losing of the old guard that seems to be happening at Marvel right now?
Talk to me about this.
So Steve Rogers, not Captain America anymore. Mm-hmm. Bruce Banner, not Hulk anymore. Kamala Khan is Miss Marvel, even though Carol Danvers is around still as Captain Marvel. I've heard some mufflings on the internet about how they're getting rid of the old guard. Some people are really upset about that. Mm-hmm. I'm totally fine with it. I have no problem. Like, if I didn't see Bruce Banner for 2 or 3 years,
I'm totally fine
with
it. I
would not shed a single tear.
I love the Captain America thing so much.
Yeah,
I love
too.
That you turn him into like an elder statesman. He's an old, like, he's physically aged and he's just like taking a step back.
Still incredibly handsome. Even though he's 96 or whatever.
I think we need it. And all this stuff in these big continuity books, this big universe, we need these kinds of changes where characters are, their role in the universe is totally different than what it was. I completely agree with
you. And I made a statement before we started, and I stand by it. Like, now that Miles Morales is Spider-Man, like, I like the new Dan Slott Amazing Spider-Man.
It's great.
I think it's a fine comic
Absolutely.
Book. But I don't know how much I need Peter Parker right now.
Yeah.
Like, I'm way more interested in what's going on with Miles than I am with Peter. Like, the cool thing they're doing with Peter Parker right now is he's rich.
I'm in love with Peter Parker, but I also feel you. I think Miles is a great addition to the Marvel Universe.
If you had to have just one in the Marvel Universe right now, which one would you
choose?
Don't
ask me to choose.
that's the thing.
Yeah.
You don't
have to choose because there's both. But Peter's my dude, and Dan Slott, I got it to say, man, I mean, dude's 5 years on Amazing Spider-Man is, you just jump in anywhere on Amazing Spider-Man that has Dan Slott's name on it, and you'll be a happy camper.
Yep.
That said, I can't wait, so they're relaunching Miles Morales' Spider-Man with Sarah Pacelli, the original artist.
Ooh.
And can't wait. That's early next year.
Yeah, my care level is just, like, way higher for these new characters.
You know, and that said, like, I don't miss Wolverine at all.
Yeah.
I'm crazy happy with X-23 as Wolverine.
Right. He's old, too.
Yeah, get him out of there.
In the universe, he's old man Wolverine.
He is. That's great.
Yeah,
That's a really good point, Marcus. I totally agree with you. I think it's a really cool direction.
But I can see how some people are angry. I just think they're wrong.
I say don't be angry. Just jump in here and give this stuff a look because there's some talent. I think Marvel's in a really good place right now. Mm-hmm. I think they're handling their massive slate of characters, their roster, really well.
Yeah. DC, take note.
The numbers bear that out, as
Big
we'll talk
time.
About yeah. shortly.
DC.
Oh,
boy. Do they bear that out.
Wow.
Yeah, DC, please take note.
Yeah. So, totally. How do we feel about the title? Totally Awesome Hulk?
I think it's way better than All New, All Different Avengers. That's for sure.
I completely agree with you there.
I'm in love with Totally Awesome Hulk. I think it fits the tone of the book.
And he's 19. Yeah. Like, yeah, I guess if I was 19 again.
He does think things are totally awesome.
Right, exactly.
All right, cool. Totally Awesome Hulk, number one from Marvel Comics.
Yeah.
It's got Amadeus Cho giving a thumbs up on the cover.
And a wink. I love a good wink thumb.
And a wink. His wink's a little awkward. It's tough to wink well.
That's a hard skill.
Yeah.
Yep.
I try to wink at one person every day.
Do you do it like this? Is this your wink?
In order to practice. You can't do a visual wink gag on a podcast,
oh,
Curtis.
Right. We're talking into mics.
Oh, my goodness.
Got it. Okay.
You guys are both doing it now. Useless.
Word. Hey, Nick.
I love you both.
What's your stupid big pick of the week, you awesome, sexy beast?
Well, you guys picked some really fun books, and as is my custom, I'm going to pick something really pretentious and sad.
God darn you.
The Sheriff of Babylon.
Ooh.
From Vertigo Comics.
Sounds fun.
Isn't it? It's about Iraq.
Oh.
In 2004.
Oh, the saddest war.
Yeah. So, let's all stop having fun.
Great.
And talk about this comic that opens with a quote from Revelation.
Jesus Christ.
I'm not going to read. I really like this book. We all read it.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think we're all agreed.
Yeah. Loved it.
It was very, very good. It's about a lot of things, but it's about kind of, is it a police procedural? I don't know that it is. A
little bit.
It's about politics in Iraq during the war. the most interesting thing about the book to me is that it pivots around this young woman who is a councilwoman.
Yeah.
She's on like the Baghdad council. And she's basically a fixer for problems.
Yeah.
Both like legal and extra legal. So somebody comes to her with this thing, she gets to the root of it, and sometimes to solve the problem, like some people might get killed.
Right.
So it's about American soldiers, it's about the whole, you know, cluster cuss that is the Iraq War, mm-hmm. and all the moral shittiness that comes along with that. But it's also about these people who are living there and navigating it, navigating the politics of it, and navigating the brutal reality of living in a war zone.
I think for me, for my money, the really interesting part of this book was considering that every faction, every group of individuals involved has a perspective.
Yes.
And a point of view, and they have conflicts and desires, and it's hard to mitigate between all these different parties.
What do you mean?
Just there's, you know, this particular person had a truck stolen, but the person who stole the truck is this person who's then tied to this group. Mm-hmm. So trying to navigate all these different factions.
Yeah.
And considering each faction as, you know, somebody who's worth listening to, right?
So this is my favorite part about this book, is that often in pop culture and in movies and whatever about Iraq, comic books also, Iraqis are often just painted with a pretty broad brush. They are usually, they're all victims, or one is a translator, or they are all terrorists, or it's really easy to just make a story about American soldiers, and then there are just the Iraqis in the background.
Yep.
Right.
And in this book, we see, you know, as we meet this councilwoman, who is this badass, like, you know, seemingly, she might be the antagonist, but she's got a lot of depth. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on with her. She's interacting with people from all walks of life in this society, from religious leaders to protest leaders.
Hospital administrators.
To huge, yep. You know, opportunistic jerks. And you just see this, like, broad swath of people in this society, so that the society, it feels really full and fleshed out in a way that we don't usually get to see. We don't usually get to see Iraqis portrayed that way in any, I can't think of many.
Yeah, it's all presented from our perspective.
Exactly.
The American sort of military perspective.
And that's in there, too. And then there's degrees of dudes in the American military.
Yeah.
So you have jerks, you have people that care, you have people that are just trying to get by. And they packed all of this stuff into this one issue, this really complex issue that's, in theory, centering around the disposal of a body. Yeah. And trying to figure out what to do with it. Marcus, you look like you're cooking on something over there.
No, I just what I really dug about this was, I think it really, when we see the green zone in pop culture,
yeah,
it's either just like a staging area, or it's a place for a little bit of development. But what this book really does is it shows that because we're dealing with the military and the bureaucracy that is the military, this place is such a mess and there's so many problems. But because there's the hierarchy, it's like, oh, well, this is my problem. Now it's your problem. And then the guy below me moves the problem onto someone else. And so the problem never gets fixed or solved. It just gets moved around a lot until we meet this one female character. And that's what she does. Is that she fixes these problems. She's the one who finally makes the problem go away.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting. It just goes up and down the chain of command. It never really gets fixed until she comes in and fixes it.
Yeah, the idea of managing a situation like this is, you know, you read a book like this, it really puts that part into perspective. Yeah.
Also, you know,
I was going to say, you just have so many different, you know, wheels in motion.
How is this book written by the same guy who was the mastermind of Convergence?
So that's the other thing I want to talk about. Also, Fatima is the name of this character.
Fatima, thank you.
And I had to look that up because there's so many characters in this book that I just got like totally lost. Tom King, to me, is synonymous with very mediocre DC books.
True.
I thought that Tom King was not a real person. I thought it was like an amalgamation of editors. That just, they got to put something out, and nobody wants to own up to it, so they put Tom King on the title.
They created Tom King.
That's really rude when I say it out loud.
Yeah.
But true. He is a dude, and I cannot, and because he wrote Convergence.
Yep.
Which is one of the worst things that I've read, and I don't even know how long.
Yeah, it's
my life.
Yeah.
Yeah, Convergence was the big DC crossover event from earlier this year that launched another DC reboot, And it was a mess. It was gobbledygook.
Yep.
That dude wrote this Sheriff of Babylon book, which is nuanced and character driven and very deep and complex.
Yeah, and really unique.
Yeah.
That was the thing about Convergence, is that we were reading it, we're all kind of saying, like, oh, I've seen this before.
Yeah.
But this is, I mean, the storytelling is great, but it's also like, there's not another book out really like it right now.
I just loved it. I thought it was great. And so all this stuff aside, it sounds very kind of like preachy. It sounds like I'm getting up on a high horse, but the story was just super compelling. It's like this noir story at its heart.
I can't wait to read the next issue of this book.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a really fine comic. And the artist, Mitch Gerads, I think his name is. The art's very well done. Suits the book perfectly.
And not to shit on DC Comics, but what this makes me think is we can see that Tom King has some writing chops.
Oh, he's got huge writing chops.
Yeah. Right, so is the reason that his regular superhero stuff is so kind of run-of-the-mill grinder is maybe it's not his fault, but maybe it's editorial's fault.
It's, you know, up is down and down is up for me. If Tom King's writing good comic books, I don't fucking know what to believe anymore.
Right.
Well, and we've heard stories, you know, anecdotally and talking to creators that DC editorial is a problem.
Yeah.
You know, they don't know where the ship is going.
And maybe that's it.
Yeah, so I wonder.
So yeah, that's The Sheriff of Babylon. It's another Vertigo number one.
Can I theorycraft or can I make a prediction?
About what's going to happen in this book?
Something about this book.
If you must.
This book to me screams TV adaptation.
Yeah?
When I was reading this, that's what I was thinking is like, who's going to pick this up?
Mm-hmm.
Is Showtime going to pick this up? Is HBO going to pick this up? I think this could be done in a televised way really, really well.
Cool.
Yeah, I thought it was perfect for that.
Maybe. For now, I'm just going to enjoy the comic.
Yeah, overwhelmingly, Vertigo. You know, we've had one or two
hiccups.
You know, one stinker and a couple okay books, but I'd say overwhelmingly, this Vertigo relaunch is going pretty good. Yeah.
What are the ones that you really liked out of this Vertigo relaunch?
So far, I like Survivor's Club.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to read Unfollow number two. I didn't hate Unfollow number one. We love Twilight Children.
Twilight Children, I love.
So, you know, some good ones.
Between this and Twilight Children, I'm going to call it a win.
There you go. I mean, two very seriously good books.
Yeah, call it good.
Yep.
All right, our big picks this week were Jim Henson's The Storyteller, Dragons. We have Totally Awesome, Hulk, and The Sheriff of Babylon.
All number ones.
All number ones this week. We did it.
Yay.
We did the thing we're supposed to do.
There were so many books that I wanted to pick this week that were number twos and threes. There's a lot of really good twos and threes this week.
Yeah.
So.
But, you know.
Yeah.
They're still out there.
Yeah.
You want to talk about those right now? You guys want to just do that?
Could we do that now?
We'll just talk about it. We call this little part of the poll box. This is everything else that you should read. Besides these number ones, these three that we just mentioned, there's a whole bunch of other stuff that came out this week. Here's a few for you to consider.
So we've talked a lot about Extraordinary X-Men, which issue number three is out this week. I've stated a couple times that I thought it was kind of a bummer of a book. But here comes All New X-Men number one, written by Dan Hopeless. Who I like his stuff a lot.
Dennis Hopeless.
There we go. Thank you. Sorry.
No, I think it's Danis.
It's not Danis Hopeless.
Well, Dan is short for Danis.
I see.
Anyway,
we'll pretend his name's Dennis Hopeless.
Please continue.
So Cyclops is dead. We know that. He's kind of a jerk and has been a jerk for.
Well, nobody know that Cyclops is dead.
We know this. Cyclops is dead.
Yeah. Okay, maybe the listener didn't know that.
Oh, sorry, listener. Spoiler alert: Cyclops is dead.
How did Cyclops die?
We don't know.
Oh, he's just dead.
Secret Wars isn't over yet.
It was something in Secret Wars.
Did you hear Secret Wars got pushed back again?
Come on.
Yep. Found out yesterday.
God damn it.
So in this one, what has happened is Cyclops is dead, but there are a bunch of jerkhead mutants out there, and they're wearing his like weird X mask as their identifier, and they're causing all kinds of trouble. Meanwhile, if you read All New X-Men, a bunch of the X-Men from the past were brought to the present.
Yes.
They're still around.
I am in the weeds.
Really?
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. And I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, all right. So X-Men from the past are brought to the present to fix things. It doesn't really work out, and they're stuck in our present timeline.
Okay.
Which means we have a young Cyclops who had a great series called Cyclops. Everyone should read it. It's a great sci-fi thriller. But either way, this book centers around him. And
I've forgotten which book we're talking about. All New X-Men?
Yes.
Okay.
This book centers around, at least this first issue, around young Cyclops. And he's trying to distance himself from this negative imagery of the other Cyclops. And I know this sounds very confusing,
yes,
very convoluted. It's not. It really isn't. This book is about the X-Men trying to re-team up after Secret Wars.
Okay.
And it's the young X-Men are trying to distance themselves from the X-Men of old, mm-hmm, and they're trying to decide what they want to be in this new, all different Marvel universe.
So, because in the Marvel universe, the X-Men are under assault again, and they're an endangered species again.
And that's what Extraordinary X-Men is dealing with.
Yeah.
This is a much more character, why I liked this one a lot more. It's much more character-driven, and it's got a younger X-Men cast, and they're really trying to decide, do we need to be the X-Men that everyone thinks we are?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're leaning towards no, and they're going to try something a little different.
Does the book have teens in it?
It does.
And you liked it?
I did.
Outstanding.
Also, new Wolverine, the Wolverine, as she calls herself, formerly X-23, is in this book. She transfers over very well.
She calls herself the Wolverine?
Yeah, that's how she differentiates herself from Wolverine.
Like, don't call me Wolverine, call me the Wolverine.
Yeah.
What's up, the Wolverine?
Yeah, and...
Hey, the Wolverine. You guys want to go get a hamburger later?
But it's got the classic, the original X-Men cast. It's got, you know, Jean Grey, Angel, Iceman, Beast.
Go.
And Cyclops, which is the original.
The original lineup.
Original lineup, which I think is really cool and a great throwback.
Hey, can we do a public service announcement real quick? Because as you were talking about that comic and you try to talk about the X-Men, it's like a lot. And anybody who doesn't read the X-Men would hear all that and would be scared.
It sounds like a nightmare.
It's not.
Here's the thing, though.
Yeah.
We've said this before on the podcast, and we should say it again all the time. Don't be afraid. I'm just, you know, you're a person. I'm interested in the X-Men. Come into a comic shop. Say, give me an X-Men book. I swear to you, get a little bit of advice, but just throw a dart and dive in. This stuff is pretty navigable. It's not quite General Hospital, where you could not watch an episode for 7 years and then watch an episode and be totally up to speed. But it's almost like that.
Did you just compare X-Men to General Hospital?
I did.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
They have a lot in common.
No, they break it down in the first couple pages. You're all caught up and ready.
So with all of this stuff, like usually, if you're willing to be lost for the first issue,
yeah.
Usually, the first issue, especially in these like big continuity books, they spend that first issue tying it to the big continuity, and then it's off telling its own story.
Yep.
So if you're willing to just let yourself be a little bit confused for 30 pages, it gets better.
Yeah. What would Steve Rogers say? Something about a boat and learning how to swim? You know, jump into the water?
Go on.
I don't know.
No, let's hear it.
I don't got nothing. Steve Rogers would have something to say about this. Just do it.
Yeah.
You know? I think Nike would say
that. Just jump in the water from the boat.
And good luck. You can do it.
What else was in your pull box?
I got Joe Gollum number 2, Occult Detective, The Rat Catcher Part 2. We talked about this. I think this might have been my big pick a couple weeks ago. This is a great book from Mike Mignola and Chris Golden, and it's about a Gollum who's maybe a Gollum, and he's a detective. Children are being abducted by creatures, mm-hmm, that live in the water in this kind of slummy neighborhood.
I thought that first issue was cool.
It was great. Orphans, monsters, detectives. Great comic.
Orphans notwithstanding. That was a good book.
Yeah.
Paper Girls number 3 came out this week.
Cool.
This book continues to kick butt.
I fucking love this comic book.
Paper Girls is about 4 girls who are all have a paper route. Route?
Route.
And they encounter the supernatural. And something's happening to this whole town. And we have no idea what it is. And it is wild.
So, issue 2, I was like, what? Mm-hmm. Issue 3, I was like, what? Like, he is turning it up.
Yeah.
Every issue, this comic is getting crazy.
The whole thing has this kind of like 80s vibe. Think Monster Squad. Think The Goonies. It's really, really good. It's from Brian K. Vaughan, the same dude that's doing Saga and Cliff Chang. Also, our buddy Jim Ottaviani.
Yeah.
Who, the writer of Feynman.
Yeah.
The New York Times bestselling graphic novel, amongst many, many other works. Jim Ottaviani is also a customer at Vault of Midnight. He is the best dude.
He's a very cool dude.
He got a letter in the back of this issue.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Nice work, Jim.
Did you guys know that you can write in and they'll send you a membership card?
No.
What?
Yeah, to the paper route. What is the name of this guild? Hold on a second.
This is incredible. I love sending things in the mail and getting things back.
But it's going to end soon. They're getting ready to wrap it up. The American Newspaper Delivery Guild.
And you can get a membership
card with an individualized, unique number.
Well, I'm doing that today.
Yep.
You have to send them a self-addressed envelope. Well, so you send an envelope, but then there's another envelope inside the envelope.
That's happening.
So that's Paper Girls.
Wow.
Cool. Red Wolf, number one, came out. Again, part of all new, all different Marvel. Red Wolf is a really interesting character. He's a Native American sheriff who is trying to clean up town, but he's dealing with the racism of the West.
The town of Timely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's a pretty cool dude. He's got a real good head on his shoulders, yet a lot of people don't take him seriously because of this blatant racism in the town he lives in. But that being said, there's the twist at the end is really going to mix this character up.
It's got a twist.
It's got a great twist at the end. I love this book. I thought it was a lot of fun. I've been digging that 1872 run that they did for Secret Wars.
Me too.
This is the follow-up to that.
What is that?
1872 is the Western world of Marvel. Steve Rogers.
This was an alternate universe in Marvel, kind of like an Elseworlds thing where Steve Rogers was the sheriff of town.
And don't let all that scare you. Timely. Yeah, right. You could just read this book without knowing anything else.
Yep.
Yeah, totally. Yep. But it's a great. Red Wolf's a really cool character. I'm glad to see him in the mix, and I'm interested to see what Marvel is going to do with him. I really enjoyed it.
Agreed. I was prepared to not like that comic.
And really?
I thought
why is
it was
that?
Pretty cool.
Why?
I just, you know, it's a sensitive issue. Is the character's name is Red Wolf.
Yeah, that's pretty stupid.
You know, so I'm not a huge fan. You know, I'm one of those liberal dudes who thinks that, like, you know,
yeah, but
that's sport teams' names, the you know, Redskins, this kind of stuff. I'm not a huge. I think that's
it seems unnecessary.
Not my jam.
So that's a question though. Is like this dude, this character's name has been Red Wolf for a really long time. Do you rename him?
You do.
You do.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't think.
Do you rename the Redskins?
You absolutely do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Red Wolf would be okay if we...
You know, and that's the thing. Just because we've been doing something, right, I don't say keep doing it.
Nope.
You know, that's not a compelling reason for me to keep doing anything.
Yeah.
That said, Nathan Edmondson, you know, has some credentials to write this book, so that's cool. He's got some roots. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I did a little investigating there. You know, I'm not going to tell a lie. I'm very excited that Ta-Nehisi Coates is writing Black Panther for a lot of reasons. He's a great writer, great character. But he's a black man writing a black character, and that's super important. You know what I'm saying? Okay. So if a Native American character is written by a Native American, I think that brings something to the table, you know? And also that the name Red Wolf, you know.
Do you rename Black Panther?
Black Panther, I think, has another connotation, though. That to me, that reminds me of the Black Panther Party, and that's a positive, right? And I don't know if that's true, if that's just my mind that I'm associating. When I hear Black Panther, I almost always think of the Black Panther Party.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about you guys. But maybe that's, you know.
I think it's all worth thinking about.
It's all worth thinking about, for sure.
Red Wolf seems like kind of an anachronism to me. It seems like, because that's not like anybody was super nostalgic or familiar with the character. Like,
right.
He changed
his
name. Like, you just call him by his original name, which is Ned Wolf. And, like, you basically wouldn't have to change anything at all.
Right, there you go. Ned Wolf.
All right, we're almost out of the poll box time.
Sorry.
Let's just wrap it up real quick.
Yeah, Spidey number one, I'm excited to read. Robbie
Did you
Thompson.
Guys know that Peter Parker got bit by a radioactive spider and it gave him the powers of Spider-Man?
I definitely read it again.
I learned that again in Spidey number
one.
Sorry, go ahead. What else you got?
I got East of West 22. I won't talk about it too much. It's still great. It's still John Hickman. It's still Nick Dragata.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best designed, best books out there. That's what I got.
Fantastic. Hey, what about thick-ass comics?
So many thick-ass comics this week.
Yeah, let's just run through them really quickly. There was a very sexy Rat Queens hardcover that came out this week. All black, silver, inlaid text, embossed.
Mm-hmm.
Rat Queens, if you haven't read it, is the story of four kick-ass lady adventurers, a la a dungeon-crawling crew.
Yes.
You got the wizard, you got the fighter, you've got the halfling.
The tank.
You've got the tank.
Mm-hmm.
And they kick butt, and they do what they want.
Yeah.
It's a really, really good book. If you haven't read Rat Queens, I highly recommend it. It's just awesome. And then this is the first like kind of big deluxe hardcover we've seen for that.
It's super swanky. And you know, it does all that great Dungeons & Dragons stuff, but it's got a smartness and a sass and a wit.
Mm-hmm.
That is a great comic
book. One of my favorite comics.
Mm-hmm.
Although the art now bothers me. The new artist, Everett Marcus, pointed it out.
Yeah.
The new art. They keep switching artists on that book.
It's a problem.
Anyway, we can get into it another time. Private Eye.
Yes.
Is a book that Brian K. Vaughan and Marcos Martin put out over the course of like 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was digital only. It was donate what you want. You went to panelsyndicate.com.
Yes.
And you can donate whatever you want to get the issues of this 10-issue maxi series. It was great. I read it all digital. And they swore up and down they will never release a physical copy of this book.
Liars.
But this week, a hardcover came out for Private Eye.
I don't even care that they lied.
I'm just glad that it's out.
I desperately wanted to own this in hardcover.
It's a great book. Yep. It's about a future where the cloud bursts and everybody's private information becomes public. And in response to that, the entire world turns off the internet voluntarily because they're so terrified of... privacy becomes more important than anything else in the world. It's a really, really good book.
Yeah. And the art is, I mean, Marcos Martin, we know him from Daredevil and some other books. Mm-hmm. The art is supremely good.
It's crazy good. And yep. They just announced yesterday, on the day that this hardcover came out, there's a new digital-only series called Barrier from Marcos Martin and Brian K. Vaughan.
Love it.
On their website, and it's Pay What You Want. I got the first issue. I haven't read it yet. But
they're never going to release it in hardcover, though.
They're never going to release it in physical format.
Can I ask a personal question?
Please.
What do you think a digital download for a comic is worth?
So I paid $2.99 for it.
Okay.
I was going to pay $3.17 because that includes tax. But that first issue is 52 pages of Barrier number one. So is that worth $3?
Yeah.
I don't know. But I really like those guys and I like what they're doing, even though they are biting into our bottom line.
Not anymore. Not when they release a swanky hardcover.
Yeah, as long as they do that eventually. Hey, what else came out this week in Thick-Ass Comics?
Dude, Space Riders.
Yeah.
All issues Space Riders collected one glorious graphic novel, $12.99, Black Mass Studios. This is Fabian Rangel Jr., who we talked about a little earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Great writer. Alex Zarit, the artist on this book.
He's perfect.
He's
a perfect little angel.
I love him so much. Whatever you do, buddy, I'm buying it. I'm reading it. Fantastic. I'm so glad I met you this year.
I want to share a milkshake with that guy.
Oh, my goodness. It's comic shop only, you dudes. I got to point that out.
The collection?
This collection you can only get in the direct market comic shops.
Oh, I love these guys.
You cannot buy it on the internet. You cannot buy it at a bookstore. You can only get it in the direct market, which means comic specialty stores, Black Mask. Not only are you putting out some of the best books of this year,
mm-hmm.
but you got our back.
Thank you, Black Mask.
Because we've been going to work on this book. I consider us a partner with Black Mask Studios.
Yeah, we've been pushing this book.
We've been pushing this book because it's great. We want to put it in front of people. They're reciprocating. Very cool.
Yeah, read Space Riders if you haven't.
Do it.
And the last one that I want to talk about is Only Child, which is from Guojing.
Yes.
How do you guys feel about my pronunciation of that?
That was good.
It's good. I'm not going
to
try it.
So this is, it's been compared to Sean Tan, who's done a ton of graphic novel work, usually like very meticulously drawn, very pretty, contemplative books. They're usually pretty sad.
Not a lot of words.
Yeah. This is supposed to be very, very good. And Liz, Curtis's wife, your wife Liz,
yeah,
said it made her cry.
Yeah, which is great because my wife is like a stone. And I mean that in the best possible way. Yeah. You know,
yeah, you're gonna have to.
She's my rock, literally.
Let me clarify.
Yeah,
you know, she's been a waitress, a midnight waitress for decades
at like Denny's,
which I like to call the Vietnam, in the middle of the Vietnam War of late night dining.
If that doesn't harden you up a little bit,
yeah.
I don't know what will. But Liz really liked it.
She really liked it. So if it made her cry, I don't even know if I can read this book.
You're gonna lose it.
I'll be an emotional wreck for weeks.
You're gonna look. Just look at the cover.
I know.
You're tearing up. Just looking at
right
the cover.
Now. Yeah. No, it looks beautiful. The art's beautiful. And so that's out today. We're super psyched for that. I think I want to read it.
Excellent.
Because I'm so sad.
And that's Only Child. Thick-ass comics. And there's even more than that. But we got to move on.
We got to mention Absolute Batman Court of Owls.
Absolute Batman Court of Owls also came out.
It's gorgeous, and it's the best Batman.
Fantastic. Let's do the numbers.
Let's do it.
Marvel's market share rebounded to 44%.
Holy shit.
Market share for Marvel Comics, almost half of the entire comic book industry. Double that of DC, which is like 21 and change.
That's
literally double
garbage.
DC. Marvel took every... This is for October
yes.
2015, mm-hmm. or the numbers that we're talking about, courtesy of ICV2. Thanks, ICV2. They took every single top 10 spot in the single issues top 300.
Wild.
Can you believe that? October saw a 9.5% decline in comic and graphic novel sales over the previous year. 9.5% down over the
Huge.
Previous year. But we're still up year over year by 5%
right.
To that point in the year.
Sure. Because
we had a really strong opening. So it was another kind of crazy month in comics. That all new, all different thing from Marvel was, you know, finally getting that off the ground and getting Secret Wars starting to wrap up. That
yeah.
was that was kind of the shot in the arm that they needed.
Well,
44%.
Yeah, they did bi-weekly on a bunch of those relaunches too, so I'm sure that helps.
Oh, absolutely.
Kill it, you know, when you're doing two books a month on a relaunch. That's,
yep.
that's
but
big.
This is the thing you're talking about earlier, Marcus. Like this, their approach to their universe is clearly you're not the only person that feels
right.
this way because
it's fresh,
working.
It's relevant. It's a diverse cast of characters that represents the world we actually live in.
Yes.
So here's my question. Marvel's killing it.
Yep.
We've been talking about it all issue. If Marvel was to acquire DC Comics right now, would you be bummed?
If Marvel was to acquire DC Comics?
Yeah. So, I mean, they're making a lot of money.
There was talk of this a very long time ago.
Yeah, this is a big hypothetical here. But if you would have asked me a couple years ago, like, oh, Marvel buy DC, I'd be like, oh, no, that's terrible. We need two different groups in this realm, two big dogs to play against each other. But right now, I'll tell you what, if Marvel was to get the rights to Batman or any of the other, like, if they were to get DC, I think it would be one of the best things for comics.
Can I tell
right
you
now.
Something? I don't give a shit who owns what.
Yep.
I don't give a flying shit.
Really?
If you have good editorial
yep.
and good writers and good artists making books, I could care less who owns the books.
But yep. that's kind of what I'm saying. It's like, I think like Marvel's editorial right now has really figured it out and they've honed in on what's working, and DC just does not seem to be getting it.
I err towards the side of competition. You know, most people who know me know I play primarily on PlayStation, right? But you want Xbox and Nintendo out there driving.
Keeping them sharp.
You know what I mean? You want competition. You really do. I mean, Xbox or Nintendo does something cool. So, you know, Sony's got to, you know,
yeah.
answer in kind or risk falling off. Same thing. DC needs to fire their in-house. They need a clean house.
Woo!
Get them all out of there. Sorry, everybody. Dan Didio, I don't know what your job is, my man. I'm calling you out right now. As a comic shop who sells comics, you know, we want to sell the best books to people, but we also have to pay rent and pay employees and stuff. I don't know what you guys are doing. You are missing the point. You are not paying attention.
DC's got to take a note from Marvel here.
Do you guys want to take a guess at what the number one selling book, single issue book was?
Star Wars.
Invincible Iron Man.
Really?
It's a good series.
Yeah, it was good.
Iron Man, I have not been reading Iron Man for a grip, and I started reading this Invincible Iron Man run. Brian Michael Bendis is killing it.
Yep, it's good.
On this Iron Man run.
Did you guys see Spider-Gwen at number 3?
Spider-Gwen at number 3. You just keep going down this list, and it's like, so Batman makes an appearance at number 11.
Yep.
But we don't see another non-Marvel book until 20.
Wow.
At Justice League number 45.
And those are DC's easily two best books.
So in the top 20, it's all Marvel in the top 20 except for two books.
How did Contest of Champions...
Hey, Paper Girls number 1 was number 23. That's cool. Sorry.
That's good
Beat
news.
Justice League. Like, that's a book I don't care... That's one of the few Marvel books I don't care about.
No.
Yeah.
But apparently, it's doing well.
That mess is crazy. And I just want to take a really quick look at... the top-selling graphic novel
Let's
for October,
yeah.
Star Wars Volume 1, The Skywalker Strikes. Hey, Bitch Planet Volume 1 was number 3. That fills my heart with joy.
I love it.
Bish Planet. Outstanding. Well, those are the numbers.
Maybe That's what we got.
Maybe I need to read Contest of Champions.
I read it. I did not prefer it at all.
That's how I felt.
I'm just saying, like, it's number 19 in the single issues. The trade is up there in the top 5.
Well, we know that if something's popular, then it must be good.
It's gotta
we
be
do know that.
I mean, something's got to be going on
it's
there.
It's worth a look anyways. Yeah. I say do it.
Yeah, it's worth a look. Hey, let's slide into the board game corner.
Oh, let me put my suede jacket on.
I'm going to put my house shoes on. Excuse me.
Put your house shoes on. Put your suede jacket. Get comfortable. get strategic with me.
Oh, get strategery.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, we played a game this morning right before the podcast.
Oh, yeah, we did.
This is going to be the fastest review in history.
Let's do it.
Codenames.
Uh-huh.
From Vlada Shvadl.
That's the designer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great board game designer.
Great.
He did Galaxy Trucker.
Ooh.
He did Through the Ages. He did Space Alert. He's done so many things. Dude makes games like nobody else does. He makes really weird games. Codenames is a game about spies.
Mm-hmm.
25 words on the table. What could some of those words be?
House.
Yeah.
Bait.
Yeah.
Princess.
This, tree.
I feel like
ground.
The words that you guys are saying say a lot about you. Keep going.
Queen.
Well, there we go.
Box.
So, 25 random words, seemingly completely disparate. They all represent a secret agent out in the field.
Yeah, that's their code sign.
That's their code sign. House. Queen. Whatever.
Great code sign, man.
So, two players play as the spy masters. One's a spy master for the red team. One's a spy master for the blue team. This is a word game, essentially. You give a clue about your agents out on the field.
The spy master does.
Exactly. I know which of these 25 words, like 8 of them, are my spies. They're my blue team spies. But they're all just a bunch of random-ass words.
Got it.
And my job as the spy master is to tell the person on my spy team, you, Curtis, you're on my spy team.
Okay.
I have to give you a clue that lets you figure out which of those words are on our team together.
We want to reveal our spies.
Which of those agents are on our team.
Yes.
But I can only say a word that is a clue. I can't say any of the actual words, obviously. So it's pretty fast-paced. It's totally make something up. But unlike a lot of word games, it doesn't rely on, you know, it's not necessarily like your apples to apples.
Right.
Or it's not personality-based
per
se. But a lot of it comes from, so if my clue, so you said house and then bat.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two of the words. I might say a word like cave two. And then you would have to find the, I just did that off the cuff.
Right.
Just like, this is just off the dome. And then you would have
bat, problem.
Then you would have to identify bat and house from that. From that clue.
Yes.
And if you pick incorrectly, you can either reveal the other team's spies by accident, you can find these goofy looking kind of like civilians that doesn't do anything, or you can accidentally choose the assassin.
And then it's game over.
Game over.
You just lost the game, dipshit.
So real quick.
So it doesn't matter how many cards you revealed. Let's say red team has all their cards but one out there. Bam, red team gets the assassin. Doesn't matter.
Over.
Blue team wins.
So it behooves the spy master to not give any sort of clue that would ever indicate the assassin.
Got it.
Yeah, this game's great. I love it.
It's really, really good. It's very, very simple, and it teaches you that, well, Marcus gave a clue, so that's what he thinks that this means.
Yeah.
But I have to get in his head. It's not just what I think it's associated with. It's what would Marcus associate with his clue, because he's the spy master.
Right.
I just love this game.
I thought it was going to be stupid.
Yep.
Like, you guys started setting it up and explaining, I was like, I don't care about this game at all.
Mm-hmm.
That said, by the time we got done...
Wrong again.
In my sea of bad thoughts.
Yeah.
Yes, I loved it. We got to the end of it, and very good.
Very good.
Yeah.
Well, that's Codenames. Check it out, if you can. Back in stock soon?
Trying
somewhere,
very hard.
Somewhere in the world?
Trying
I'm sure
very
you can
hard
find
to
it.
Get it back in stock.
Codenames.
Affordable game, too, am I right?
$19.99.
Not bad.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us today. Our producer and editor is Rachel Polk. Our music was created by A-Bomb. All of our art and design was created by Philip Wong. And we have a very special thanks to the Ann Arbor District Library for the use of the Freedom Shrine Recording Studio.
And please subscribe to us, Super Skull, on iTunes and leave us a review, please. It helps so much. We're getting some reviews, you guys.
That's great.
So that's good news.
Don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Our handle is Super Skull Show. Also, please check out our website, superskullshow.com.
Super Skull is brought to you by Vault of Midnight, Earth's finest comic books and stuff and podcasts since 1996. My name is Nick Wybar.
I'm Margaret Schwimmer.
And I'm Curtis. How many times can you say Super Skull on this podcast, Sullivan?
And we wish you good reading. Until next week.
So in my mind, like my early 90s playlist is a little bit of Nirvana.
It's the best.
We Were Nearly Freshmen really sticks out in my mind.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, yeah.
He was touching her face.
Oh, the love for me. I cannot remember.
Who is it?
I don't know.
And we never compromise for the life of me.
I have no fucking idea.
You know this song.
No, I don't.
Everyone knows this song.
I'm sorry, I don't.
We were near the verb pipe.
Don't know it.
The verb pipe.
You seriously have never heard this song?
I mean, maybe it's ringing zero bells.
Yeah.